How are the Twins doing this? And are the Vikings really going to do this? We'll get to both.
Mackie and Judd. We get things rolling with the opening bell.
Want to ring the bell?
There's a ball lifted to right field. This is up. It is back, and it is gone for Rosario. A bunt single in the second, and a solo home run here in the fourth. Strike three. Got him.
With a big punch out.
Got him. Got him, high and tight. Got him. Two downs. Got him. Talk about a finishing kick.
Strike three.
Got him on the outside corner, two down.
You know what? I got to thinking, Twins sweep the Indians, and for like the fourth time, when you think they're okay, it's over now, and then they come back almost every time and turn the season back around. They're back in first place. The irony to me is that even though this Twins team contains many of the bad remnants that got Terry Ryan fired, that Terry Ryan was responsible for in his second stint as general manager, and you can just smell these things permeating bullpen, pitching overall.
You can smell them.
Ironically, this team also contains many of the same components from the first time Terry Ryan was GM. Teams that outperformed what you thought that they should. Teams that showed heart and grit and all those immeasurable things to overcome their shortcomings. And this team reminds me a lot of the little engine that could Twins from 2001
Resilience.
Or from 2009. Yeah, they
Resilience
just,
is the word you're looking for.
They keep getting back up off the mat despite, when you look at it, the eye test, you should say, yeah, this is not a team that should be in the playoffs.
And because of that, I have an announcement to make right now. And I might be criticized for this, but do you remember how we opened last Monday's show? Coming off the four games, the four awful games, I believe they were outscored 28-8 by Cleveland. Four games in 3 days, they were swept, and we started the show
I think we traded everyone on that show.
Yeah, well, now you really can start to look around.
We fired everyone and traded everyone, yeah.
They have now had three times where they have gone into what looks like the start of the tank for them, and they have successfully emerged, and in all cases, either stayed in first place and or got back, in this case, into first place. I am done trying to figure out who this team is. I am going to enjoy the fact that it appears to be a bunch of guys who can overachieve with two starting pitchers who are definitely legit, and then a couple of executives who basically are playing rotisserie baseball on a daily basis by making pitching roster moves that seem to be working, including this one. Let me give you this one. Over the weekend, three games against the Tribe, a bullpen that thoroughly embarrassed itself against Houston, and a bullpen that's been awful at times, 11 and a third, six hits, one run, one walk, nine strikeouts. I am going to enjoy this season and quit trying to figure out who these Twins are, because every time
there's zero chance this happens beyond
every
today. Every
time I think that they're done, they come back and get back into first place.
So what does that mean, that you're not gonna call for the trading of Irvin Santana? I mean, that I'd rather have the old Judd, where he just is kind of riding a roller coaster from day to day. I think ride the middle, wait and see Judd is boring Judd. You might as well not even come to work if you're going to be ride the middle
Judd. I've
got
other things I can talk about.
You're not seeing it right, Phil. This is the roller coaster.
Okay.
This right here is part of the roller coaster.
Oh my, I think you're right.
This is that flat part where you've already gone down a couple big time drops and now you're plateauing before the next.
This is the catch your breath kind of moment before you take the big spin and the dive and you do the twirl
deal. I think
deal.
You just saw through me.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, I think you're right.
There's an upside-down component to this ride that hasn't
I gotta lay down.
Yep.
I think you're right.
But they don't... Okay, he's actually laying down right now.
I feel better.
Okay.
Much better.
But
thanks, Judd.
They don't... When you just look at the team, and you look at them compared to Indians or Houston, they don't look like they're supposed to win a bunch of games. And they somehow do. In fact, I just compiled, and you could probably triple the amount of things on this list, but strange Twins facts... which lead you to wonder, how are they in first place almost halfway through the season? We're almost to July here.
Mm-hmm.
How are they at minus 38? They're a minus 38 run differential.
Yes, one of the worst in the American League.
Tied for worst in the division.
Yep.
And tied for third worst in the American League.
Yes.
And bottom like 5-8 in all of baseball.
Yes.
yet they're in first place.
Yep.
They have a 16-25 record at home, which is the worst in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their road record is the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They have the second worst team ERA in the American League, just under 5.
Yep.
And the second worst bullpen ERA in all of baseball, just over 5. Yet, they're in first place halfway through the season. And in a league of strikeouts where you got it, basically strikeouts and home runs are the only two things that happen during any given at bat now. So in a league of strikeouts where you have bullpens averaging 10, 11 strikeouts per nine, and some teams are averaging a strikeout per inning, the Twins have struck out, as is the norm the last decade, excuse me, fewer batters than any other staff in the American League. And yet they win.
Yes.
They continue to win despite
you
all of these things.
Most important weird stat possible. Their backup catcher, who happened to have to play left field on Saturday because they had nobody left because of sicknesses, also has pitched 6 times.
Yeah.
I mean,
Well, you could even take that a step further and say, of the 27 pitchers
so
they've used so far, their backup catcher is like top 6 or 7 most reliable.
So let me ask you this. If I gave you
and they win!
If I gave you guys right now, take everything that you just said and what I just said into account. Blind test. So you don't know records. You know nothing. On a blind test, if I took all of these facts and put them in front of you, what's your guess about where this team's at right now? Run differential, which is awful, as you just said, home. So you know that they've done well on the road. You don't have specifics, but where would your guess be?
Well, I would say between 8 and 12 games below 500. Because run differential is actually pretty predictive over the long haul. It's pretty predictive. And the other teams, now the Royals are also a minus 38, and they've gone surging lately. They're a game or two above 500. But other teams that are 30, 40 runs below the, you know, that they've been outscored by 30 or 40 runs, you're talking 5 to 10 games below 500. So I would say if I were to look at everything I just read, all right, well, they're minus 38. They're horrible at home.
Mm-hmm.
They're pitching. Their ERA hasn't gotten any better since last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they still aren't missing any bats.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that they don't have a historically good offense, which they don't, I would tell you, yeah, that's like a bottom 3 team in the American League. Might even be headed for 100 losses again.
Yeah.
And they're in first place.
The one thing I will say about their success, though, if you watch this team play, and if I'm not mistaken, during the course of the disastrous season last year, you harped on this quite a bit. If you watch this team play consistently, the one thing is this defense is so good. Their defense, Buxton on Saturday, I believe, again, made 2 great catches. Dozier made a great play to save a run from scoring on Sunday. The one thing about this team is that pitching staff is being bailed out probably once or twice per game.
Yeah, I think of the 27 guys they've used, half of them aren't really major league pitchers. They're just trying guys out. You know, Justin Haley is a Rule 5 guy. Adam Wilk is a quad A pitcher. But those 2 catches you referenced from Saturday that Byron Buxton made, one was twisting and turning and crashing against the fence with at least 1 runner on, right? Yeah, there might have been 2 runners on.
He got turned around, yes.
And then to end the game, yep, only up by 2, to end the game coming in like that, those are 2 catches that at least half the center fielders in baseball, maybe even more, don't catch.
Yes.
And the Danny Santana, when he was playing center field the last 2 years, he doesn't catch. Mm-hmm. Rosario doesn't make those 2 catches. And it's easy to watch the games and just kind of, you know, become accustomed to Buxton making those catches. But when you multiply that out, not only those 2 in that game, and if that ball off the wall, or if that rings around and they score an extra run, or if he whiffs on that dive and that's either a single or even it gets
all
by him,
the wall,
and then
yes,
we're talking multiple runs that could have scored if he doesn't make those plays.
Yep.
And then you multiply that out maybe 50 to 100 times over the course of a season, and it's obvious.
That's how you get to 103 losses.
Yeah, but it is, and it's also how you somehow stave off terrible pitching,
yeah,
anonymous bullpen guys, and a terrible home record, and still remain competitive at this point in the season. So we can talk way more about this. You know, last Monday it was sell, sell, sell.
Might as well trade Irv.
We can discuss as to, you know, what they should do going forward here. We'll have Hector Santiago, Derek Wetmore, but
ding, ding.
We've got your favorite show is Law and Order.
Oh, I love it.
You watch hours and hours.
The wife and I, yes, sit down and watch marathons that she has taped.
We have. I'm gonna officially deem it Kombucha Gate with the Vikings doubling down.
Federal regulators claim their kombucha has too much alcohol content after some samples tested above 0.5% alcohol by volume, about 1/8 the alcohol in a light beer. The Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, or the TTB, has sent letters warning of possible fines, suggesting new labeling, and threatening to move the drink from grocery shelves into liquor stores.
Okay, so here is Kombucha Gate, Pioneer Press, TwinCities.com, our buddy Brian Murphy, who will join us in studio here. He's the main detective on the case here. Mm-hmm. Vikings back Michael Floyd's kombucha tea defense in Arizona. Wide receiver says team encouraged the consumption of kombucha. I'm going to read a couple paragraphs here because this story warrants some setup, and then we have a lot of thoughts on it.
Yes.
The Vikings are covering Michael Floyd's flank in his kombucha tea defense as the wide receiver prepares to face an Arizona judge today to explain how he violated house arrest by accidentally ingesting alcohol. Vikings chief operating officer Kevin Warren, who you might remember from the Adrian Peterson stuff from a couple years ago, wrote a letter to Floyd's attorney, Robert Feinberg, who attached it to a defense motion urging Scottsdale City Judge Hendricks to cancel the hearing and reinstate electronic monitoring. Warren corroborates Floyd's claim that he was unaware kombucha tea contained alcohol when he drank several bottles when watching movies late into the early morning of June 11th. Quote, I'm writing to request Mr. Floyd not have his court-mandated requirements negatively impacted since he did not know the kombucha he ingested contained alcohol, Kevin Warren wrote. Okay, the Vikings are saying he didn't know. We've been encouraging players to drink kombucha.
Yes.
He didn't know the kombucha contained alcohol.
Yes.
This is our bad. We're vouching on behalf of him.
Yes.
This is a very slippery slope the Vikings are walking down.
Included in all of the court filings was a sworn affidavit that Floyd said the Vikings encourage their players to consume kombucha tea as a health drink and that it is served, quote, on tap at Winter Park.
So either there's a million different scenarios here. Either people are lying and maybe even enabling a serious problem, or people are negligent. Let's hash this out when we come back. I'm guessing you're probably not going to hear this on a lot of other stations today, but Michael Floyd clearly has a problem. Michael Floyd and the Vikings are saying, no, it's something else. But even if it is something else, I raise an eyebrow at the Vikings. Let's dive into it with Brian Murphy when we come back here, and also more on the Twins, much more on the Jimmy Butler acquisition and all the excitement from late last week. It's Mackie and Judd on a Monday.
Mackie and Judd show will continue in a moment.
This is ridiculous.
What are we going to do?
On 1500 ESPN.
And this portion of Mackie and Judd is sponsored by Menards.
It's a law and order here on Mackie and Judd. If Brian Murphy can find an acceptable pair of headphones. Wonderful.
It's every Monday here at the studio.
Wonderful reporting. You awkwardly approached Michael Floyd in an elevator at a charity event last week.
That was not the end of the story. It was just merely
chastised.
The beginning.
And then you have a story, TwinCities.com, Pioneer Press. The Vikings are standing up for Michael Floyd's kombucha defense. And I'm just going to sum this up, but let's get to what we think about this. And if you want to fill in some of the details, then sure. You know, you're welcome to. But let's break down the Viking stance here. Michael Floyd is scheduled in Scottsdale today to stand in front of a judge.
3:30 Central.
Okay, so in a few hours to explain why his blood alcohol levels spiked the second week of June. And his defense is, I was pounding kombucha. I didn't know there was alcohol in kombucha. And rather than just letting this play out, the Vikings have put their stamp on it with Kevin Warren, the team COO, saying, hey, we can corroborate this. Kombucha is available. Michael Floyd told, at least in your story, Michael Floyd and his representative said the team is encouraging players to drink kombucha. So
it's on tap at Winter Park.
So the combination of the Viking stance with Michael Floyd's stance is, hey, he didn't know there was alcohol in kombucha. And according to Michael Floyd, the team is recommending that we drink this regularly. So three possible conclusions here. Well, number one would be that Michael Floyd's lying, and it wasn't just kombucha, and he still has a serious problem that needs to be dealt with. Number two would be, if Michael Floyd didn't know there was alcohol in kombucha, shouldn't the Vikings have known that if they're supplying it?
Well, Kevin Warren in that letter also pointed out that the U.S. Bureau of Tobacco, Alcohol, Firearms, I thought it used to just be ATF, it's a new acronym now, but that he actually referenced a 2015 or 16 warning that that federal agency put out to these drink producers saying, your alcohol levels are improperly high, either reformulate your drink or you're going to face a fine. So they went so far as to research all of that, and they're still serving it at Winter Park to a known alcoholic.
So, or number three, maybe the Vikings don't know the contents of the things that they're offering to players in a league in which the locker rooms have signs all over the place. You are responsible for what you put in your body. Pat and Kevin Williams.
The ghosts of suspended.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. So, I mean, if it's a cover-up, if the Vikings know that Michael Floyd has a problem and they're going along with a story that's completely bunk and BS, and they are enabling him with a serious problem because, damn it, they need a wide receiver to get through the season and catch a bunch of passes, if they're enabling him through a cover-up, people should be fired. It's one thing to give a guy a second chance. It's another thing when you know that someone still has a problem to be actively covering up. And so this is a really slippery slope they're walking
down. I am really surprised at how far out in front the Vikings have gotten in Michael Floyd's defense. Because when the news broke on Friday the 16th from TMZ that he had triggered these false or these positive tests, he categorically denied it to me in the elevator. But I think he might have either not known exactly what the story had said yet, or maybe he might have been in dispute with the number of tests. I mean, I think he left himself an out. I think TMZ said he
yes.
There were five tests.
Yeah,
there's actually
right.
only three.
Yep.
So there's a little wiggle room in that. But I think in his eyes, he didn't do anything wrong. The Vikings, of course, came out with the perfunctory, we're gathering information, you know, we'll get back to you. You know, I mean, that's kind of boilerplate cut and paste. I figured that's where they would stay because really, this is, it's not even a league matter. It's an Arizona criminal matter right now. He's due in court in Scottsdale today to prove to a judge that that's what show cause means. Show up and tell us why this was caused,
mm-hmm.
and maybe I'll believe you.
By the way, would the judge really take into consideration a letter of corroboration from an entity that has millions of dollars invested in the performance of that player?
Perhaps, because it's the fancy title of chief operating officer. I mean, Kevin Warren's number three, and he's also their chief legal officer, too, so he's a lawyer. Hold on. I'm just saying that. But I think even more so in these files was in this document dump on Friday, they've already hired an expert. They got a forensic pathologist.
Hold on a second.
God. To say... I'm just saying, how many other DUI defendants are hiring forensic pathologists to say the kombucha tea that I drank caused this? Now, he's a hired gun. We all get that. But they are going all in. His lawyers and the team are all in trying to convince this judge, don't throw him in jail. He's a good guy. He made an innocent mistake. I could see his attorney doing that. I'm surprised the Vikings are all in on that.
Okay, but here's what gets me. Arizona is very tough on drunken driving convictions.
They actually have a conviction called extreme DUI, which I think is over 2-0, right?
All right, so
he was 2-1.
Yeah, so Arizona bent over backwards to say, okay, you got a job with the Vikings, you can leave, house arrest is over here, you've got to do this, and this.
That's not a slam dunk either. So.
But here's my question, and here's the point to me. Whether it's Floyd or the Vikings saying, I goofed up. So the Vikings are now basically trying to say, no, it's our fault. Does it matter? Does it matter? Because what you have is negligence that caused. I mean, you can't. When Michael Floyd left the state of Arizona, he was specifically told you can't have alcohol in your system under any circumstance. So if the employer now comes along and says, you know, sorry, we fed him it.
That's negligence.
That's negligence. And if I'm the judge, I'm not sure I care.
If I'm Commissioner Roger Goodell, maybe that's an argument better left for Park Avenue.
Sure.
To you know, for whatever punishment
that's
he may be facing.
That's an employer issue in that
case. If I'm the judge in Arizona who has sentenced him to these terms of probation after he pleaded guilty, also set the parameters, and also allowed him to leave the state to complete those terms, I may not be willing to necessarily swallow everything that they're trying to sell me right now.
But do you even care what the Vikings say? I mean, the Vikings are trying to say, it's our fault that he
helps.
Did.
But if I'm a cynical city court judge in Scottsdale, probably not.
I just, I, so I'm trying to simplify this because I think there's I don't want to get too caught in the weeds, and I know people haven't been following every step of the story.
Yeah, it broke over the weekend, so it's kind of hazy. But
either the Vikings are, if the Vikings are to be believed, and Michael Floyd is to be believed, that hey, we just didn't know that there was alcohol in kombucha. That is unbelievable incompetence on behalf of the team that is supplying this this drink to players, to not sort of know that there's a different animal here. Michael Floyd has to be treated differently. We know what's in the things that we're giving, whether it's food or drinks, to the players. That's unbelievable incompetence if it's to be believed that the Viking, Michael Floyd didn't know, you know, we didn't know that he was drinking it. Just throw your hands up. Or if it's a stretching of the truth, or if it's flat out lying, then it's enabling and you're patronizing fans. And you're also potentially covering up for someone who needs more professional help. So you mentioned the forensic medicine and pathology doctor from Wyoming.
Sheridan, Wyoming, yes.
So Michael Floyd hired Thomas L. Bennett, a doctor of forensic medicine and pathology in Sheridan, Wyoming. Apparently they couldn't find someone at Mayo Clinic or the University of Minnesota.
How about Jackson Hole? Just go to the one town with buildings there.
Yeah, sure. So this is from your story. Bennett reviewed Floyd's breathalyzer test and interviewed the Vikings wide receiver Tuesday over the telephone, concluding in an 8-page report to Judge Hendricks that Floyd's noncompliance tests were caused by fermented kombucha tea. To a reasonable degree of medical and scientific certainty,
and
Bennett wrote.
And this is in quotes.
Yes. Are achievable and consistent with ingesting kombucha, the circumstances and the time frames as Michael Floyd described. So he's saying it is absolutely possible that you could drink enough kombucha, whether it's two cases or a case, in that time period. So just for fun, I Google searched Thomas L. Bennett, the same doctor that
you
said in the story.
You vetted him more than I did on Saturday.
Well,
go ahead.
I was curious. Is he commonly summoned for these types of stories? From the Oklahoman, on December 10th, 2011, prosecutors on Friday, so this is 6 years ago, prosecutors on Friday attacked the credibility of a medical expert whose testimony contradicted that of an expert for the state who said a toddler died from blunt force trauma consistent with abuse. The case was 31-year-old Omar Jamon Hill, accused of killing his girlfriend's daughter in 2010. And Dr. Thomas L. Bennett said the internal injuries were caused by compression consistent with prolonged CPR, not a hard punch, kick, or stomp by the man prosecutors believe killed the girl. 2 days later, this man was sent to prison for the rest of his life for killing a 3-year-old. So to me, Dr. Thomas L. Bennett is, who's going to just vouch on behalf of defense? Like, this whole thing reeks to me, and I don't know why it drives me so crazy. But
here's the bottom line to all this, though, is if we really want to drill deep into what this is all about.
Yep.
It's the Vikings' lack of a red zone offense.
No, you know what?
I'm not being cynical. That is exactly what this comes down to.
I told you.
Everybody's willing to sell everything out because they cannot get the ball in inside the 20-yard line to a viable receiver in the end zone.
I told you this off the air. This is that what you just said, and it is the indictment here. It's not against Michael Floyd. It's against Laquan Treadwell. This speaks volumes about the fact they don't trust him one bit. And here's the thing, and I've covered this team on...
Cut a deal, Jack.
Hey, listen, whenever you get an expert, do you know why you have to go to the godforsaken town of Sheridan, Wyoming? Because you have to get an expert, as I've learned through my years of watching L&O, you have to get an expert who will say exactly what you want. And you know what? They probably started in Rochester.
No, they probably started on the East Coast, and as the sun kept setting and the offices were closing Friday, they got all the way out to Wyoming, and someone picked up the phone!
No. Somebody picked up the phone who said, oh, sure, I can do that.
How much? That.
Do you know how many forensic experts probably said, you gotta be bleeping kidding me, and hung up the phone? Because you got to get somebody who's willing to say exactly what you want. And once again, the important thing here, as you said, Murph, this is not an NFL matter. If you lie to Goodell, you know what? You probably shouldn't, but who cares?
There's a lot of lying going on.
But God help you, if you go in front of a judge and you're like, this football's really important, God help you, because you can get in real trouble this way.
Hopefully, for the sake of everyone involved, hopefully the Vikings and Michael Floyd are telling the truth to some degree. And it was and the worst transgression here was just negligence on behalf of the Vikings, that whether it's the people who are supposed to communicate what's in the food and the drinks that you're
good
putting
faith
in your
negligence
body.
If we want to go down that road.
I guess like that isn't that sort of the
I don't know. I'm surprised that they went out as far as
but
this.
I think you're right. I really think it comes down to when do the Vikings make their worst possible decisions? When it involves an obvious panic about their football team. Peterson. They were going to bring Adrian Peterson back on the heels of the child abuse charge immediately. Why? Because Zimmer was new and they said to win football games, we need him back as soon as possible.
Yeah.
That's it. They make their absolute worst irrational and hubris-like decisions when they're panicked about the on-the-field product.
One last thing on this, just because I've seen different experiments and different publications the last few days.
A lot of professors of kombucha tea out on Twitter.
So just, and I'm getting this from your, if you want to read the full story about the Vikings essentially vouching for Michael Floyd's defense.
I tweeted it out again this morning as well, Murph P. Press.
So this is from the story. Floyd said in his affidavit that between 1:30 a.m. and 4 a.m. he drank 4 or 5 bottles of kombucha tea while watching movies. Now, kombucha's alcohol content, as listed, is about 1/8 of a light beer, of a Bud Light or a Corona, which is about 4%. We're talking about 0.5% of alcohol.
And different brands have different levels, too. Wherever he got it from Whole Foods, I wrote it in there. It was some initial, but I don't know how that ranks.
But let's say it takes, and it's different for different people. Now, he is a 215 to 220-pound male, so he's not exactly, dainty. He's
also
exactly
said he hadn't eaten since noon the day before, which I don't know how good that is as a professional athlete.
So let's say it takes 3 to 4 beers in a short time, just regular light beers, to get close to the legal. We've all had that where you have a couple beers, you're not quite sure. 3 to 4 beers maybe in a short time to get close to the legal driving limit of 0.08. And we're talking 0.05 is the tested number here. So if that's the amount of beers we're talking about to get to 0.08, then how many kombuchas would it take to get to 0.05? Between 15 and 25? That's a lot. He said 4 to 5. Okay. Well, then there's the argument of room temperature kombucha could lead to higher alcohol.
He
volume,
did leave it out on the right? counter at Kyle's house, right?
So if it's out.
Was the sun on it? Was it not on it? How high was the thermostat?
So let's say he was drinking at room temperature, and instead of 1/8 of a beer, it's more like 1/2 of a beer in terms of alcohol content. We're still talking about pounding maybe 7 to 10.
Between
kombuchas.
1 and 4 in the morning?
It's.
I mean, you'd spend the whole day in the bathroom.
Yes. Or you would just get sick first yourself. Jack McCoy. We need Jack McCoy.
651-646-8255. If you want to chime in, Brian Murphy hanging out with us, Mackie and Judd.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
You won't regret this.
On 1500 ESPN.
I don't know who's gonna kiss you when I'm gone.
Mackie and Judd, Brian Murphy. Ace detective and reporter and columnist.
Lenny Briscoe.
For Pioneer Press. Sorry about that. For
good.
Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com.
Everybody thinks we're the same anyway.
Oh, we don't have that problem at all. We wish that was the case sometimes.
Actually, that's not true.
Thomas L. Bennett. Just a couple more things on this, because Michael Floyd is going to be in Scottsdale today in about 5.5 hours to explain to a judge why his blood alcohol level spiked early in the morning, second week of June. He's supposed to be on house arrest for 3 months. And one of the arguments that the Vikings and Michael Floyd are making is, well, why would a guy go through 90 days with 5 days left on his house arrest and then decide to pick up a drink? But
why,
you got to remember,
why do alcoholics do whatever
correct.
They do?
We're not talking about logic when dealing with alcoholism. And it runs in my family, so I'd like to think that I've been exposed to some of this stuff. But the expert that was summoned and hired by Michael Floyd, Thomas L. Bennett, a doctor of forensic medicine and pathology, and he has said to a reasonable degree of medical and scientific certainty, the blood alcohol levels of 0.05% are achievable and consistent with ingesting kombucha. So this is totally plausible and totally possible. Found this story in The Oklahoman. I read you guys snippets of this from 6 years ago. A murder trial in which the jury essentially deemed Thomas L. Bennett's testimony to be wrong because they convicted, get this guy's name right, Omar Jaman Hill and sentenced him to life in prison for killing his girlfriend's daughter in 2010. Defense attorneys contended the girl's injuries, which included a lacerated liver and pancreas and skull fractures. Defense attorneys contend that those were caused, at least the internal stuff, by compression to her chest during CPR, and they summoned Thomas L. Bennett to corroborate that story. Now, the prosecution cross-examined in 2011 and accused Bennett of being a hired hand for this particular defense attorney because Thomas L. Bennett had testified for that defense in 46% of his 77 criminal cases since 2005. A hired hand to say what the defense attorney wants him to say.
And remember, this is a criminal trial where they had months, if not years, probably to prepare. Floyd's attorneys had about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So he may have gone the Google route that you did and thought maybe he didn't go that far down Google, but maybe he found him on Google and he answered the phone on Friday evening.
So to be clear, Murph, the Floyd camp and the Vikings basically asked the judge, call it off. Our guy's a good guy. He screwed up. Let's just
here's the explanation. We put it on paper.
But as of today, the hearing is still on, and there's been no change, or the Arizona authorities have said nothing.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I was in touch with them, and it closed business Friday. It's now 7:37 out there still, so nothing has changed now. By this morning, once the court's up for business, there may be some more paperwork. There may be some more, there may be something that maybe the judge reads all this and goes, yeah, my docket's full. I buy all this. just let him stay in Minnesota and we'll figure it out. I doubt that, but I'm just saying he's required to be there at 3:30 Central to explain.
I do think, though, gents, that we come back to the conclusion that panic about your team can make you do silly things, right? Because when the Vikings, every time I think about it, if the Vikings are rational about something, they actually do a pretty good job. They do a decent job. But when they're irrational and the fear is, oh my gosh, if we don't have Michael Floyd on the field, we might have to play Treadwell. And we really don't want to have to do that unless it's absolutely necessary. I come back to the fact that the Vikings make what seem to be panicked and odd moves when they are afraid of the fallout on the field.
I would almost say that it specifically we referenced the Peterson case of 2014,
yes,
when they tried to rush him back on the field after the indictment was announced, and we all remember that Monday press conference with Rick Spielman and Radisson behind them, gagging in their corporate office as what was coming out. In fairness to Spielman or even the Vikings that day, that was also a tough thing strategically to do, to go out in a press conference and try to explain your way through that jungle, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is much more calculated. This is your chief operating officer and the best lawyer in the building putting pen to paper on Vikings letterhead and CCing Mark Wilf and Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer, basically saying the organization believes X, and sending that off to a judge, which becomes a public record. There's some calculation to that. So the risk reward is we need him that badly that we're willing to go out on this limb because it could get sawed off by the end of the day Monday.
Yeah. Again, it kind of comes down to two potential paths. Either it's a cover up of some kind and football is more important than helping somebody fix a serious problem. And if that's the case, then a lot of people should probably be held responsible and lose their jobs. It's one thing to take a shot on somebody who deserves a second chance and has maybe shown over the course of months or years that they're getting on the right path. Totally fine with taking second chances on guys. Totally fine with negative PR because it's an entertainment industry and your job is to entertain and put a good product on the field. Once it crosses over to the line of, okay, now the problem has popped back up, I think there's some obligation to, if not help, then cut bait, right? If not help, don't enable.
So stay out of the way and let Arizona do the dirty work. You know?
Or on the other side, the other conclusion is that everyone's telling the truth here, and there is some amazing irresponsibility on the side of the Vikings for providing an alcoholic drink to a player who cannot ingest alcohol.
That's almost worse. If you take a step back right now and say, okay, you know what? Everybody is being truthful. And the Vikings just happen to have on tap a drink that they very well should know contains even a trace of booze, considering it's being fed to at least one guy, if not more, people who have drinking problems, right?
Yep.
The irresponsibility there almost bothers me more because these teams claim we know everything. And like Phil said, you walk into the locker room, what you put in your body. So if we are now saying, that this was not the player's fault, but that the team was feeding an alcoholic basically alcohol, if that's what they're saying, well, then I'm saying to myself, well, hold on a second.
Where were the retina scans above the tap of kombucha tea so that every player that is allowed to drink it should be able to drink it? Did Floyd usurp that as well? I know we're being flippant here. We shouldn't be, but
can't we find
it comes
drink,
to that.
But can't we find a drink that's,
water.
That's good for the players, that the players can enjoy and can help them, that doesn't contain the threat of alcohol?
Water has no star caps in it, has no acetaminophen, has no steroids, has no THC, has no kombucha. Well, Gatorade's got sugar and all kinds of other artificial flavors as well, doesn't it? Just pure water.
It is just,
it's such a Viking story.
It is a very Viking story, and the root of it all is we have a young man that is at the, you know, he's found himself at the very edge of acceptable behavior when it comes to alcohol. Not even on the edge; he's way over the edge. It reads and reeks like an enabling pamphlet here, and that's what's sad about it.
Lubomir chimes in on Twitter at 1500 ESPN. Get at me when you're done doing radio math. Sorry, we're thinking a little bit too much these last couple segments.
Did we put numbers in there?
We'll try to dumb it down, I guess.
Were there a lot of numbers?
I didn't think we had
numbers.
I don't know. I didn't think you did math.
A lot of people are chiming in with thoughts, though. I'm just going to read some of these.
Yeah, I'm curious what everybody digesting this is saying.
Well, Alex says, Michael Floyd's kombucha defense is interesting, but I would have gone with the beer-battered cod defense. John says, such a garbage organization. Over and over, they show they have no shame and will accept anything to win a game. Paul says, I'm guessing if he was drinking that much tea at 2 a.m., he was trying to dilute his urine test. Elliot says, regarding kombucha, it's a living probiotic and can be very sensitive to your stomach. After like 5 or 7 of them, you would probably throw up. Isn't that, didn't you see something?
Yes,
on,
I'll find
it. Vice
yes,
News?
Vice, so let's see here.
A lot of amateur chemists out there the last couple weeks.
Yeah, basically the story I found said that to get your blood alcohol up like Floyd did to 0.044,
spiked at 5.5.
And it would take 2 cases over 1 hour. So a guy from Vice Sports tried to drink as much as possible. He estimated he had between 40 and 60 ounces of this before he simply threw up.
Yeah. Hugh says, if he passed every test until then, you mean to tell me that he suddenly decided that at 1 o'clock in the morning one night he'd drink a bunch of kombuchas? Come on. Yeah, no, I mean, the whole thing is...
Yeah, yes, that's a very logical answer, and they are counting on that to... After 91 days of 96-day home confinement, he's going to suddenly relapse?
Yeah, and just to clarify, this isn't meant, this whole conversation to me and the tone of it isn't meant to, you know, to demean someone with a problem. I'm more frustrated with the potential patronization of fans and...
Here's the thing. I know what you're saying, and it's very protective of Floyd, but Floyd is the one pumping this story out there and his advocates, and he's also got the team doing it as well.
Yes.
So they are subject to this kind of scrutiny.
Sure. But to that point right there, what surprised me the most about this entire thing is that the team got on board.
I agree. I'm shocked that he might be desperate.
I get that. It's not smart, but
his lawyer is going to get paid to advocate. The Vikings have a lot more at stake than just one wide receiver, in theory.
Mackie and Judd.
Hang on. Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
So, this is the dealio.
On 1500 ESPN.
I don't care. I love it. I don't care.
It's not too late to get your 4th of July off to a running start with the Red, White, and Boom TC Half Marathon Relay and 5K at Father Hennepin Bluff Park in Minneapolis. Race participants receive a technical shirt and a collectible pint glass, plus an exclusive finisher medal. There is a distance for everyone. The walk-friendly 5K, 6.5-mile, 2-person relay, and the half marathon. If you're not a runner, you can volunteer on race day to support the popular community event, and you'll be thanked with a t-shirt and picnic food. Details at 1500ESPN.com, keyword events.
There's a ball lifted to right field. This is up. It is back, and it is gone for Rosario. A bunt single in the second and a solo home run here in the fourth.
You know what the irony is about this Twins team, Brian Murphy from the Pioneer Press? Terry Ryan would be proud of this little engine that could Twins team with all these flaws and this mostly terrible pitching outside of 2 guys and maybe Kinsler and a couple others who pop up. They are outperforming almost any way you would possibly look to measure this team, sitting in first place nearly 3 months into the season.
Piranhas 2.0, right?
It kind of.
Or 3.0, maybe? Because
Piranhas with a few, they got a few sharks and whales in that lineup compared to 15 years ago. Yeah, there are a couple of whales.
We got Miguel.
I heard you guys driving in here talking about, to me, it's gumption. It's fortitude. It's all of that. I mean, that
it's hockey words.
Battle level.
We've resorted to hockey words to describe
gritty
this
runs,
team.
Greasy runs,
greasy runs,
greasy runs. That sounds really.
They got
bad.
A lot of guys that go to the front of the plate. They got a lot of guys that aren't afraid to go to the front of the plate
to dig in.
I am amazed at their ability to kind of whitewash anything bad that happens. I don't know what the numbers totals, but. The 4-game sweep by the Indians here, and then the 3-game sweep by the Astros here. Yep. What was the run differential in that?
It was like 30 or something.
28-8 in the Cleveland 4-game sweep,
and the other one,
the
was
Astros
even worse.
One was a complete. Debauch.
I mean, it was like 42-16. Okay, it was
So the Yankees and the Astros are the class of the American League.
Yep.
Obviously, the Indians, the defending champs. Everybody expects them to be there at the end. These teams have just ragdolled the Twins at home, by the way, and every response from that has been very powerful. You know, now you look at the rotation, it's probably because Barrios and Santana, they didn't pitch against Cleveland last weekend, and Irvin comes in and he hadn't had a great June, drops the hammer down yesterday, 10 wins already. I like the makeup of this team. I like the fact that it looks like they're going to keep everybody engaged.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost at two-thirds through. All-star breaks out on the horizon. I can appreciate what they're kind of putting together, whether or not they're even at the end of September. They're going to keep everybody engaged. They have to start improving the product at home, though. You can't treat your fans to garbage baseball every home series.
You're 16 and 25 at home.
And you can't expect to win. Like, you're not going to be 20 games above 500 on the road at the end of the year. So you got to win home games just to stay in the race.
Am I right in saying that the 2015 Twins were like this as well? I recall them bouncing back a lot. I mean, because the one word that strikes me about this team, and I think we use this in 15 as well, resilience.
Yes.
If they look bad, they look awful. And there's days where they're incompetent. And
they don't dwell on it.
And they're serious. But what is the one thing that you don't see? I don't think they have that lengthy losing streak where it's like, okay, this is it. And then they just go down, down, down. In fact, the weird thing is, if you look at this team in the three skids that they've gone into, the 2-9 April homestand, the series against the Astros, which actually was preceded by a loss at home against Tampa Bay, and this one, in each case, they go on the road and play really well.
So they go get well.
Yes, but
they're going to Fenway.
I seem to recall the 2015 team being very much like this as well, in the fact that they bounce back quickly.
Well, the one difference, big difference, at least from a practical standpoint, they catch the ball a lot better. I mean, they are a solid defensive team. So maybe the bleeding that starts in a game, they can stop it quickly. Or the bleeding that starts in a series, they can stop it quickly. Because they got guys that can go out there and pick up the ball.
Yeah, well, and that's going to be tonight. It's Chris Sale and Jose Barrios. And now the Twins have gotten the better of Chris Sale, even with the White Sox. The Twins, I think Chris Sale was tipping some pitches a couple years ago. And the Twins knocked him around 4 or 5 times. But ordinarily, in the post-Johan era, in the last, let's just say, even 6 to 8 years, how many times against pitchers of the caliber of Chris Sale and Max Scherzer and in his prime Justin Verlander did you really feel good about any of the starters the Twins would throw at them, right? I mean, you'd have to get lucky in some form, or they'd have to be tipping pitches, but when Jose Barrios is going up against Chris Sale, and I think Chris Sale faced Irvin Santana in a start at Target Field in which both guys got knocked around a little bit. This is maybe a month ago. You actually feel like the Twins have maybe not equal footing, but close to equal footing in a pitching matchup against some of the best pitchers in baseball because Barrios is on the mound.
I can't remember that post-Johan, as you mentioned.
Scott Baker.
A moment or two.
I mean, Carl Pavano was a horse, and he'd take the ball, but when Carl Pavano was going up against Roy Oswalt in his prime.
Yeah, you didn't.
You felt like you were still at a disadvantage. Your guy might go 7, but he ain't going to give up. He's not going to strike out 10.
It always would seem this kind of matchup would be Pelfrey versus Sale.
Yeah.
And it would be 9:30 at night Sale. In the bottom of the third.
Tonight
and Pelfrey looked like he just went through the laundromat.
The marquee. Jason Marquis is going to take on Chris Sale. You're right. But this is that I'm just impressed by the fact
that the other shoe's going to drop, right? Is that what we keep thinking?
No, no, I don't know.
You don't?
That doesn't.
The smart money is on the other shoe dropping.
I don't think.
But it hasn't yet.
I don't think the other shoe is going to drop in the way we think it's going to now.
Okay.
I don't think that this is a playoff team. And I do believe that they will go through a spurt that probably takes them out of that. That being said, I expected, especially coming off the 2-9 homestand in April, I thought, okay, this is it. I mean, they're just going to go down and they'll stay down and I don't think that's going to occur now. I think this team's going to go through series and games where they're awful again. But as far as embarrassing themselves or dropping way out, I'm not sure. And the league, you can win. You can continue. If you're not playing the Red Sox, probably the Yankees or Astros, you can continue to win games. There's nobody. I mean, Cleveland.
I think you're jinxing them right now in these last 45 seconds, so I'm going to blame you when they get swept in four by the Red Sox, but that's fine.
And they might be, and I am not saying that they're a playoff
team. Would anybody be upset if they got swept by four, or if they were there in the postseason?
They shouldn't be surprised.
The Twins, after losing 103 last year, have given us way more than we ever expected. It's all free money from this point. Now, next year, I think there's some more expectations because now you're getting some of these position guys get into their prime a little bit. And Berríos has shown that he's a quality, at worst, a quality starter. So I think expectations are pretty minimal from this point going forward this year. Next year, that starts to change.
And real quick, I'm going to be fascinated to see what Falvey and Levine do with Santana at the deadline.
Oh, you and me both.
If you'd have said 6 months ago, he's going to have this kind of value, you'd say, okay, you got to move him.
Yep.
Now that you're in the mix of the season and you're contending, that does muddy the water a little bit. What's their philosophy going to be?
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be fun. 6 o'clock games all week against Boston. 4 games all starting at 6 o'clock. Brian Murphy, find his stuff. Great work in the Pioneer Press and TwinCities.com if you want to read his full story, digging into the Vikings' defense of Michael Floyd 5 or so hours before the hearing in
3:30. Yeah, 3:30 Central.
Thanks, Mark. Right. Great stuff.
All right, see you guys.
Bye, Brian. When we come back here, so I've gone through, just out of curiosity, for the Timberwolves, where should they rank in the Western Conference for this upcoming season only? If we're just judging in this upcoming season, Judd, you're going to be shocked by my optimism. Shocked. Not really.
No, I won't be.
Mackie and Judd will return shortly.
It's a small price to pay for countless hours of top-notch entertainment.
On 1500 ESPN.